for on revenue for April 9th, 2007 will come to order. We have two matters for public hearing today. House Bill 3052, imposing a real estate transfer tax, and House Bill 3258, which allows certain counties to impose a real estate transfer tax. We're going to open a public hearing on both of those bills. Mazin, give us a summary, please.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3258, start with that for simplicity, I guess, allows for counties to use that state transfer tax. However, it does not put a percentage on the ability of which counties. This is the intent of the bill. This is when was introduced for the by the committee earlier in the session, is to allow for the counties who've been impacted by the federal forestry seeds deduction to find a different way to augment the services and what they have been losing. Now, in order to give you just a quick background on this process, the state in general have preempted all the those transferred real estate transfer taxes. However, in the only exception to that policy is Washington County. Washington County have started this process back in the year a while ago. Washington County collects 0.1% per transaction over the price of the transaction. Washington County gets about 6.7 million in those transfer taxes for the last year that we've tracked for them. If this policy is applied to all the state at 1%, the estimate that we are looking at is about $285 million per year. That's including the whole state. However, with this legislation, 3258, it is only open for the counties who've been impacted by the federal forest. House Bill 3052 introduces the real estate transfer tax in a different way. It introduces a new tax and a new law format, and that's why you have the bill in front of you in a lot thicker format, about 17 pages or so. The bill starts primarily by putting a number of introductions and definitions of what is how the process goes, who's involved in it, and in your staff measure summary, I try to put section by section type of analysis.
Let me interrupt you just a moment, Mazin, and announce that because of the fire regulations, there's no standing room allowed in this room. There are overflow rooms posted outside the door where it will be the hearing will be broadcast live. So those who don't find a seat should move to one of those rooms, except for Dave Barrows, who will be called early on in the testimony. Thank you, Dave. I'll go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, we're on House Bill 3052, and just before we made the announcement, I was talking about the section-by-section summary that I put in your staff measure summary. Primarily try to summarize them and bunch them in number of sections from 1 to 10, sections 1 to 10. It has definitions and definition of how the who's eligible for the transactions, who pays for the tax, what is the price, what is the property, what is the legal definition of that transition, of that transactions, and the transition of changing hands or changing ownership, who is responsible for the tax. Sections 11 to 15 describes the tax rate. It is at 1% in the bill, and how and when it becomes due, and how we treat different cases of lease or lease with option to buy, mobile homes and flooring homes, and then when it is due, and also it defines when it is not paid on time, how the interest and penalty accrues to the tax, and how is collected by the Department of Revenue. Section 16 to 22 describes the legal process and the responsibility of the Department of Revenue, the county clerks, and how the county clerks become a designated agent of the Department of Revenue, the legal documentations on the steps of the process, the refund process, and the administration of the process. Finally, sections 23-24 describe the process of financial keeping and how the distribution of the funds, where are the funds housed in the state treasurer. The funds is in the shared services fund. However, the percentages that are used or to be used for the distribution of those funds are not yet specified in the bill, and they're left blank at this time. Sections 25-26 describe the how and what happens when the law is violated, and how is the punishment, and what type of infraction, and how the collection, and under which amounts there will be punishment for the evading the tax. Effective date of the tax. And finally, in the sections 27-23, it conforms other laws that are within the ORSs to contain sightings of this new introduction law, and introduces how it is treated by ODOT. This is for the mobile homes, and the Oregon State Marine Board for the floating homes. This is, again, in a nutshell, Mr. Chair, what the bill attempts to do. And as I mentioned before, for the other one, at 1%, if everything else is being the same, we look about $285 million a year as the activity of transactions today. That is an annual number.
Thank you, Madison. We have
Mr. Chair, one clarification, yes, with staff before we get started, and I know you have a big agenda here. So the principal difference between 3258 and 3052 is one would be a county imposed, county collected, county remaining of up to 1%. If we insert the 1%, statewide, we could, but not all counties. You've got that $285 million. Not all counties are dependent upon the federal forest, so that number wouldn't necessarily be 285 if it was in fact 1% statewide. Second question I had was that that under the 3052, a new fund is created separate and apart from the general fund, and the administrative services would then reach in and use those funds to do certain activities. Do we know what those activities are?
Representative Butler, no, those activities are not specified at this point. The distribution is in page 14, lines 22 through 25. It's A, B, C, D.
All blank.
And they're left blank at this time, okay, in order to...
But these are not general funds, is what I wanted to...
These are not general fund activities. Yes.
All right, as the bill is currently drafted.
Thank you.
Yes. Other things for Madison? We have quite an agenda today. We have about an hour and 35 minutes that we can meet, so we're going to move right along, and I'll try to bring people up in panels to the extent I can. But first we're going to hear from Mr. Burroughs from the Association of Oregon Counties, and then I'll be calling people up in panels, and you may not necessarily agree with each other, but please bear with me. And if people can be brief and to the point, that would be especially appreciated, so we can get through our agenda. Mr. Burroughs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dave Barrows, and I'm with the Association of O and C Counties.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like Gil Riddell, who has signed up from the AOC, to come up with me. And the reason I'm here today is very simply this. For those of you who are not familiar, O and C counties are essentially the Western Oregon counties, Clatsop being not an O&C county, Klamath being an O&C county. And these are lands that were originally made available to a railroad that was actually constructed, the Oregon and California Railroad. And these lands have then reverted to the federal government, and they are quite different from national forest lands. National forest lands, the money is the counties, the local governments, get 25% of the take. In those days, when we used to cut trees, they would get 25% of the allowable or the sales in a year, depending on which national forest it was cut on. That money is divided between roads and schools as you, the state legislature in each of the states, determines. In this state, you've decided 75% to roads, 25% to schools. And that's... Every state has its option of selecting how they're going to divide up the national forest money. The O&C lands, which are unique to Oregon, apply only to Oregon, the counties get 50% of the money, and it all goes to the general fund. Now, Mr. Chairman, I have the Association of O&C Counties has no position on the merits of this of either bill, but the bill that I'm speaking about today, 3258, we have no position on the public policy question of whether this is a good idea or not. But I would suggest to you that if you do decide to pursue this, Mr. Chairman, that you consider adding references to the O&C receipts. Because as I read, and I'm not an expert in this, but as I read the bottom of 3258, and it refers to the Federal Forest Reserve receipts, it is my belief that that is a term of art, or close to a term of art, referring only to the national forest lands. And for the county, and so money would be, they'd have to go through the formula, and money would be determined whether they could, it would be determined whether they could impose this tax. That money that they'd impose, I guess, would go into the general fund, but for many counties, the real difficulty they face from Lane County South is loss of general fund money. The road thing is horrendous. I think the governor's spoken to that a bit with his $50 million pledge out of ODOT. But the general funds losses to these counties is where the real difficulty lies, and that's because of loss of O&C revenues. So you're only putting half the money in play here because they're about 50-50. And I would suggest that you expand it if this is the policy you desire to pursue, to include the O&C revenues.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties, representing all 36 counties. We very much appreciate your continuing interest and effort in providing an array of vehicles, legislative vehicles, to address the structural handcuffs that we have in the public finance system and to address the situation that counties dominated by federal lands are in and their lack of ability to grow out of this. Nevertheless, the commissioners have considered this, and they at this point are neutral for strategic reasons on these two. They understand that the effort would be knocked down and drag out. The resources are and time are limited. Your session is going to close soon. And we need to be focused on, there's two items that are of particular interest. One is HJR 46, which you heard, which is would permit a county to raise its permanent property tax rates by county vote. And secondly,
constitutional amendment.
Yes.
Yes.
And the second one is also constitutional amendment, HJR 14, the double majority requirement, reform of that. Those are two exceedingly important in terms, in our view, to have passed and sent to the people. We are, however, very intrigued by the Shared Services Fund, and we take this to mean, although it's not specified, that this is the county-state shared services that provide an array of public services for our joint constituency. This shows a lot of promise, particularly in terms of being part of a larger concept of an exchange of some percentage of property taxes, some property taxes for income taxes, giving the state some stability in revenues, giving us some volatility, some chance for growth. And we're prepared to talk about that. We'd like to enter into discussions about that, and we understand that would be a matter for 08 at the earliest as well. But at this point, the commissioners are going to watch this and see what happens.
Thank you. Questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Clark and panel.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Clark, Manager of Political Affairs for the Oregon Association of Realtors. In the interest of time, because I know we have a couple of realtors in the room today, I'll keep my comments brief because I do want to introduce the leadership of the Oregon Association of Realtors briefly. In my written testimony, it encapsulates a lot, and I put a few talking points in there for your information. I won't rehash those as they are already in the record. And if for a point of clarification, Chair Barnhart, you did open the public hearing on both bills.
Yes, we did.
Okay, so we'll bring the group. We understand clearly in an environment of declining federal aid and limited financing options that local communities need to seek out new forms of revenue. We understand that, and as a part of that, we have supported, the Oregon Association of Realtors supports HJR 14, which creates a modified reform to the double majority rule. We think it's important for local communities to help their folks make those decisions on those important financing issues. However, OAR opposes both House Bill 3258 and House Bill 3052 because we believe the elimination of the moratorium on transfer taxes will make a bad situation worse. Whether it's a general fund revenue or earmarked revenue source, real estate transfer taxes pose a major burden to buyers and sellers, particularly at the time of closing, when you're closing on a home. They would provide a negative impact on the cost of housing and therefore economic development. And lastly, because real estate transfer taxes are volatile and regressive, they make a poor revenue source for government budgets. That's a part of my written testimony. I'm going to leave it at that for the record. But what I'd like to do in the meantime is bring up the rest of the panel.
Please.
We have Del Phelps to my left, and we also have Art Kegler, who is the current president of the Oregon Association of Realtors, Jeremy Starr, who is the immediate past president, and Kevin Simran, who's on the leadership board of the Oregon Association of Realtors as well. So I'm going to excuse myself from the
thank
guys
you.
Just quickly.
Gentlemen.
Chairman Barnhart, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Unfortunately, I'm Jeremy Starr. I'm the immediate past president of the Oregon Association of Realtors and a resident of Lane County. Our current president is next door. We have a real estate agency hearing, and so we're kind of bouncing back and forth. So he was, I see him, I believe that's Art coming in the room there.
Do you think he's likely to give substantially different testimony?
No, I've got it. I've got the bullet point, so I'll start here. But our current law that we have prohibits the government from collecting a tax based on real estate, the transfer of real estate. And the real estate transfer tax, it is a sales tax. And it has a lot of impact in our county and Lane County with the appreciation that we have in the home values. A tax is going to just be one more burden on home affordability. When you go east of, into eastern Oregon over, into Umatilla and Boardman in that area, the price of homes are around $100 a square foot for the homes that they're building currently in the lower affordable range, and that's going to have a dramatic impact there. So, I mean, a transfer tax will impact the affordability issue on many, many levels. It does drive up the price of home ownership, and it requires thousands of dollars more at the time of closing. The real estate transfer tax is regressive, it's exclusionary, and it is a volatile tax that has no federal deductibility for either the buyer or the seller. And so, with that, I'd like to introduce Kevin Simmering.
Thank you, Chair, and committee for taking the time to hear our testimony this afternoon. I wanted to address, just to piggyback...
And would you first state your name for the record?
I apologize. Kevin Simmering.
Thank you.
Also from Eugene, Lane County. To piggyback a teeny bit on what Jeremy said, the home affordability is a big issue, not just in our county, but statewide. When you've got average sales prices of $250,000, to add a 1% transfer tax to that is another somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 on the transaction. And that may sound not like a lot of money to a lot of people in this room, but for a first-time home buyer that's scraping down together the down payment or borrowing it from relatives or whatever, that can cause a big hurdle to that. And regardless of whether the seller's paying that or whoever's paying it, we all know eventually that's going to flow down to the buyer. So that makes it very hard for a first-time home buyer. It just adds another obstacle for them to overcome. Secondly, the thing I'd like to point out, I'm not touching this.
Let me interrupt just
sure,
a second. And I'll say this for the benefit of other witnesses as well. People tend to swallow microphones because often that's what works best.
Okay.
And these microphones work better when you're actually several inches away from
perfect.
Them. And otherwise they distort.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for putting me in the right direction. Usually they want me several feet from microphones. So in Oregon, it's interesting to note, we went back and looked at the home ownership rate, and the home ownership rate for all of Oregon is about 64%. Nationally, it's right close to 70%. In the Portland area, interestingly enough, it's at 55%. So our home ownership rate in Oregon is in the last quartile of the nation, and I think if we continue to add more taxes and more costs, and this is simply a sales tax on real estate, it's going to push even more people out of a home ownership situation where we already lag clearly behind the nation.
Would you mind repeating those percentages?
Sure. The in Oregon, 64% home ownership rate. In the Portland metropolitan area, that rate drops to 55%. Nationally, I believe it's 69.5, and I may be off a couple points percents there. So, again, that puts us in the bottom quartile of home ownership rates around the nation.
Thank you.
You bet. And with that, do we want to go back to Mr. Kegler? Did you have...
Yes, thank you. excuse me. My name is Art Kegler, and I'm currently the president of the Oregon Association of Realtors, and I wish to inform you that I'm from Boardman, Oregon, which is a rural community. I'll address a little bit of that issue with you, and I will try to be brief, as I understand you're trying to get through this. First of all, currently Oregon law prohibits governments from collecting a tax based on the transfer of real estate. And that, with that said, then we have to look at the fact that we're thinking of changing that, and such a real estate transfer tax is really a sales tax. And I want to address it now a little bit more to Morrill County and the rural area in which I reside. And what I want to say is the price of a new home throughout the state usually exceeds $200 a square foot. We are building them in my area at a little over $100 a square foot. And we have many people that cannot qualify to buy that inexpensive home. And the reason for it, of course, is the low wages and the part of the economy that does not support high incomes. We work, generally speaking, with agricultural people, and you must understand that if we increase the cost of a home, we are excluding more people from the opportunity to buy and own a private residence. The fact that these people earn more in the $10 to $15 an hour rate, working in the potato plants, in the onion plants, and in the fields, indicates to you that they cannot afford a home much over $100 to $125, even if both members of the family are working. When you start increasing the cost of that home by adding a sales tax to it, you're starting to eliminate more people from ownership. And I have we're also a strong Hispanic area, and I do want to mention that I have a very good Hispanic clientele, and I'm struggling every day to get them into homes. And I would implore you to take a very serious look at this type of a program, and a very serious look at increasing taxes on real estate and separating a sales tax to that, where we're eliminating people to have an opportunity to own a home. And with that, I'll conclude unless there are any questions.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart. Thank you for allowing us our time to testify today. My name is Delbert Phelps, for the record. And I just for a little history, I did serve 4 years on the Lane County Budget Committee, 2 years as chair, so I'm fairly familiar with county budgets. But when it comes right down to it, a real estate and sales tax, that's what this is, on just the real estate industry is unfair, because it imposes a burden in just one place. And I think the counties are figuring out ways to put a tax out to the people that will affect everybody in the range of which their income is, which is more fair. And I think we ought to give them time to do that. As was said earlier, when we get to closing on homes where we're dealing with the market, where the folks are in the lower income class, medium income class, homes anywhere from $125,000 to $200,000, and you're dealing with a family where both people work, they're making $11 to $12 an hour in the service industry, and down in my end of the county, that's what the workforce is. It's ex people that used to get good wages in timber, which we can't do anymore. Now they're working in the service industry for that wage. It takes two of them to qualify for a $150,000 home. And so that's what the way the status quo is now. If we add more tax to that, why, that just puts the gap that much further in there. And I don't know. I think there would be a lot of folks at closing that would find out that the buyer can't qualify, so they can't sell, or the buyer's going to find out he can't qualify and he can't buy. In the situation. So I think there's got to be a better way. And I get the sense that the general public, and I talk to a lot of folks in Florence, have been there a long time, I get the sense that the general public feels like that the legislature in general shouldn't be talking about new taxes until they have explored every avenue there is to make sure that we're as efficient as we can be. And if the public feels that way, why, you know, this may not get much further than the next referendum. So that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
I just wanted to thank Art Kegler for coming over. Art, how long does it take you to get here from Boardman?
Traffic favorable, 3.5. Actually, today about 3:45.
Mr. Chair, when I drive by the Boardman exit, I know that I'm exactly one halfway to on my way to Salem. So, assuming I don't have to stop for gas, probably nobody east of you here today, I wouldn't think, but thank you very much for coming.
Except Representative Butler.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
I was here anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Okay. I'm not going to be able to be systematic, so what I think I'm going to try to do is take people more or less in the order in which they signed up today. It looks like I have a planning commissioner and a representative of the Association of County Clerks, David Jacques and James Morales. They're not here together, but perhaps they could come up at the same time.
Good afternoon. James Morales, Fenton County Clerk, representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. And I've asked Diana Bradrick from Washington County to join me for any questions that you may have, because she's with the county that actually assesses and collects a transfer tax, the only county in the state. So that would possibly be helpful.
Yes.
I have provided written testimony on 3052, which is the only bill that we are opposing. The county clerks do oppose this. That's it, correct? And so that goes into some of the more painful details of the legislation and as to why we are opposed to this particular bill. The other bill right now is a lot more permissive, would allow, I think, any counties to develop the processes and procedures necessary to implement something of that nature. So right now we are neutral on that and really would not be commenting at this time. I'll try and be really quick. I'm going to cut to the chase. We have a lot of bills that are coming before the legislature this year that affect the operations, the duties, and the services provided by county clerks. This piece of legislation happens to be another bill that does not include any compensation for the county clerk to provide this new program and service. So I will leave that compensation one behind. That's just clearly came to light in looking at this piece of legislation. But it's also a very complicated piece of legislation, and it's just rather hard to comprehend some of the pieces of it, let alone apply it. And rather than go into the details of that, I will leave it as that, as it's poorly written, and it's not something that I feel that the clerks would be able to implement without great pain, agony, and expense. And I'll take any questions you might have, or we can move on.
Thank you. Do we have questions for Mr. Morales, excuse me.
Thank Mr. Chair, I'm just
please.
Curious, Mr. Morales, how he really feels about the bill.
I think that's been covered. Thank you.
Chairman Barnhart, members of the committee, David Jakes, and I reside in Roseburg, Oregon. I'm a licensed real estate broker in that locale. Also serve as chairman of the Douglas County Planning Commission, though I need to be clear that I do not represent that body today. I only reference it in relationship to my experience with planning issues in our county, and there's a component of this that I think it directly affects planning, which I'll get to momentarily. What I'd like to do is to begin with a discussion of Douglas County's position at this time. As many of you are aware, we are the largest recipient of ONC revenues of the ONC counties. Approximately 50% of our general fund budget comes from the ONC revenues, which are now operating under the Rural Schools Act, the so-called safety net. This approximates about $38 million shortfall in our budget should that not be reauthorized this year. And our commissioners are very aggressively looking for opportunities for savings and streamlining of operations. But I think it's very important for this body to understand that the safety net, as it was implemented, was not a time out for county governments to begin to do better budgeting. It was an opportunity for us to get a better handle on forest management, which unfortunately we've not seen very significant movement in that direction. You know, people talk about, well, you timber-dependent county should have seen this coming, you should have diversified. And let me suggest to you, that would be about like us going over to the Saudis and say, you know, you're too oil-dependent. You guys ought to look for tourism and other opportunities to generate income. And I think we're covered up in natural resources, and we know with today's modern forest practices how to manage those to our benefit. We want to get off the safety net. Make no mistake about it. But I think I'm here today specifically to speak against both of these bills. I do not want to see this type of a, it's been called a sales tax. I don't want to deliberate too much. I think you can understand the correlation. I don't want to see that unduly imposed on one industry. And particularly as we I began my remarks about the planning process, one of the components of the comprehensive plan in most locales is to encourage affordable housing. We just had a horrendous situation in our county where we lost a bunch of mobile homes. A lot of you read about this in the paper. I presided over that hearing, and one of the key themes that kept coming up in that is as these people are displaced when the owner of the land is redeveloping it, where do they go, and what other kinds of opportunities do we have? And I think it's been said today many times, you'll hear it many more times, that this is going to put a real punch in the stomach, I think, for affordable housing. Now, the idea that some of these revenues could be transferred from one transaction and given to an affordable housing fund, I would reject out of hand as well. I think that moves us in a direction of socialism. That's one group of people supporting another group of people. I think the important goal is that we continue to move in a direction that our comprehensive plans have called for, and that is to encourage and promote affordable housing where we can. And I think this tax would be an undue burden and increase the cost to entry-level home buyers. And I thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure whether this panel members, these folks all seem to be certified smart, so I'm going to ask them the question, and then if they're not the folks that will respond to it, perhaps someone else could as they come forward. My understanding of 3052, and you've spoken to 3052, I think the two of you that have spoken, both Mr. Morales, Mr. Jakes, my understanding is that under 3052, the person that pays this includes a trustee in bankruptcy. It also indicates that any bank, national bank, mortgage company, or other lender would be a person qualified or mandatory to pay this. My question is, while it takes into account exemptions for liens to the United States government or other municipal corporations, my question is, when a foreclosure, and incidentally a trustee in bankruptcy is a person here, when a foreclosure is effectuated on one of these properties, then the bank, in offering their mortgage to satisfy and purchase the property from either the original obligor or the a trustee in bankruptcy, it's my understanding in reading the bill that they then must pay the transfer tax, and then to dispose of it again to another person, they would pay this transfer tax again, any interest or transfer of the ownership, whether it be by quitclaim or other conveyance. The question I have is there any credit for that intermediate transfer? And if somebody knows whether or not there's a credit for that, I need to know that, because it looks like to me that that really what ends up happening is that either the state government or the federal government or some other municipal corporation is the only exempt entity that can own this property without paying another tax on it.
Thank you, Representative. I think what we'll do is refer that question to staff and not expect our witnesses to know that level of detail about the bill.
Thank you.
And we'll go ahead with our public hearing and get the rest of the testimony.
There might be someone in the room that's prepared.
I'm glad the vice chair raised it, because that's how I read it too.
Thank you.
And,
yes.
I appreciate that coming in.
And of course that if the bill were to go forward, that would be I would take that as a suggestion for an amendment.
Thank you, Mr.
And Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I would just say that's just another example of how complicated and how difficult this would be for the clerks to actually implement what is being asked for in this bill.
All right, thank you. Let me just say before you go back to your seats that I agree completely with Mr. Jacques about the problem with forest planning. The federal government has done an absolutely miserable job. In other contexts, several members of this committee have expressed similar views. So certainly the key way of dealing with these problems is not for the state or the counties to have to come up with something new. It's for the federal government to get on with handling their property correctly and managing it in a way that is both good for healthy forests and also good for jobs and revenue.
Absolutely. But
thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we'll call on Terry Wilson, Carl Meyer, and Don Rist. I see there's two on that list. How about Sherilyn Homola? I'm trying to get a panel of three, and I don't think you're all connected at all. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carl Meyer. It's M-A-I-E-R. I reside at in Beaverton, Oregon. I am here on behalf of the Realtors Land Institute of Oregon. We are members of the Oregon Association of Realtors as well as the National Association, and under all is the land. With that said, we represent almost every type of land there is. There are two types primarily here today, urban and rural. I'd like to speak about the rural first. That includes farms, that includes ranches, any business that's associated in any of those types of lands. And any time there is a tax such as the one that is talked about here, it impacts those families. From the urban point of view, where you have lots of where most of the jobs are, if you think in terms of total taxation in the state of Oregon versus Washington and California, you find that Oregon always ranks the highest in those taxes. Adding the tax is not going to solve very much through there. The home ownership follows where the jobs are, generally speaking, and jobs are created by demand because there's a need for it at that particular place. So you add a tax to that business, and we have fewer opportunities for home ownership, people subscribing to those particular jobs. So therefore, on behalf of RLI, that's short for Realtors Land Institute, we are totally opposed to these two bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, and committee members. I'm Terry Wilson. I'm here representing actually the tens of thousands of clients that I work with. Are buyers and sellers, property owners throughout the state. I personally work in a number of counties, Washington, Yamhill, Clackamas, Polk, Marion, Columbia, Multnomah. So I work with people across a vast area, you know, with some of our highest population in the state. I plea with everyone, all the representatives, everyone looking at this bill to really understand it and dig deep. It's so easy to see it on the surface initially as an easy way to be able to bring a tax in from people when you expect that they're going to be coming into a large amount of money and be able to pay it when maybe otherwise they wouldn't. That is anything... but the case, I can tell you, the great majority of people are going to be devastated. It is really nothing more than a sucker punch in the gut of the majority of homeowners. And you need to consider that. You're talking about someone's major investment for their entire life in most cases. And to tax that in a way that's going to devastate them, both as a seller and as a buyer, to prevent buyers from being able to purchase their properties is definitely not something that should be considered at all. So I plead with you to look at this very hard and understand the devastating consequences it will have on property owners throughout the state and those trying to become property owners. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony very much. Let's see. Don Rist. Is that one person, John Scott Realty?
Yes.
Thank you. And then John Wilson and David Stribling.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate very much the opportunity to be here today. I actually was going to submit written testimony, but I didn't have enough copies to submit, so I'm just going to go ahead and read it to you. And I'm going to leap. My name's Don Reist. I'm a realtor from Ashland, Oregon. I've been in the real estate business for 30 years. And I'm going to leap right to what Mr. Olson was talking about a minute ago and give you my opinion. I'm adamantly opposed to both House Bills 3052 and 3258. In my opinion, property transfer taxes are the most vicious form of taxation that can lie against real estate. It penalizes change of ownership. It discourages attempts to create new and higher uses. It retards development and invites decay, and it causes stagnation in the market. Whenever voters in Oregon were given an opportunity to vote on real estate transfer taxes, they overwhelmingly turned them down. A statewide transfer tax was defeated in 1983 and again in 1984. Lane County defeated a property transfer tax in 1988 by a vote of 8-1, and again in 1994. Ashland voters defeated a property transfer tax in 1981 by a vote of 5-1, and again in 1994 by 3-1 margin. In 1986, the federal government considered a property transfer tax nationwide. The concept was abandoned when real estate transfer taxes were found to be blatantly unfair. We in Oregon talk about affordable housing and then turn around and do things that make it more unaffordable. You can't make it more affordable by taxing it. Not all property sales result in a windfall or huge profit for the sellers. Many sales are the result of hardships such as divorce, job loss, illness, and the inability to pay taxes, and the result is a net loss rather than a profit. Many seniors on a fixed income use their equity to subsidize their retirement with reverse mortgages or when they sell and move into smaller units or mobile home parks. I have never ever seen a proposed property transfer tax that had any nexus between who pays and who would benefit. Also, only 3-4% of the property is sold in any given year. Why should these people be forced to pay for what are local and statewide problems? Why should they bear the burden that in all fairness and justice should be borne by the public as a whole? In 1981, an editorial in the Ashland Daily Tidings newspaper urged voters to kill the proposed transfer tax, calling it a discriminatory tax against the few to provide benefits for all. It further stated that anything that made it more difficult to buy a home should be avoided. It was true then, and it's true now. I respectfully ask this committee to wave goodbye to these two bills. There are none of the recognized criteria for fairness in taxation. In particular, this type of tax clearly violates the standard of horizontal equity, which holds that people who are equally well off should pay similar taxes. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I have to tell you that one of the rules of the legislature is that we do not respond favorably or negatively to testimony that's given. I will ask the gentleman to try to top that, but please, no applause and no groaning if we may. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Stribling. I am from Douglas County, Oregon, here for, on the behalf of the Douglas County Board of Realtors. And we are opposed to both of these bills. Douglas County is probably a little different than most of the counties as far as our real estate has gone. Douglas County, after starting the year with very brisk sales, in December had the least amount of units sold since we joined the regional multiple listing, which was 1998. I think that is one of the things we have to consider in this bill when you're taxing people is real estate is cyclical. It goes up, it goes down. At the most, 6% of the people sell their homes, so only 6% of the people are going to be taxed. If you take for every 1% in increase of funds needed for a down payment, and low and middle income earners have have 50% of the necessary cash to close. It's a huge burden. The thing that worries me about this is the burden is paid by the people that can afford it the least. Divorce, foreclosures, job changes, all of those things are the ones that are going to be hit. When you don't have the money, this is going to hurt you the worst. Douglas County also, as Mr. Jake said, has more safety net funds than any other county. Our economy is not the best in Oregon, as we know. In fact, our real estate prices declined, which I think is one of the few in the state that's happened to. I don't think we should make more financial bad news for the people that live in Douglas County after the financial bad news that they've gotten. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is John Wilson, and I'm a broker in Roseburg and Douglas County, and also local director of the Douglas County Board of Realtors. And at the risk of another round of applause, I almost feel like saying what he said. But I just want to touch on a couple points here. I think the thing that concerns me about this bill is how narrowly focused and the burden falls on such a small percentage of people. If my information is correct, it's about 6% annually of the total population in Douglas County. It might even be less for Douglas County. And the fact that the euphemism and the misnomer of transfer tax, when in fact it really is just a sales tax again, that's been pointed out. But it's the sale that triggers the tax, and it's the price that determines the amount, ergo a sales tax. It's not only narrowly focused, but I believe this is going to fall most heavily on the lower income first-time home buyers. And in Douglas County, that's a real concern. We have an awful lot of people that fall into that category. It's also an unstable resource. Real estate is cyclical. It's not something you can count on annually to be the same thing. Real estate is an industry. And like every industry, when you tax it, you depress it. I'm under the understanding that the real estate industry and the home sales has actually been driving our economy for quite some time now. And I would hate to see one more burden on real estate. And then finally, something I learned today coming in here, that the actual distribution of this tax, if it was successful, appears to be uncertain, and that concerns me. I think if this should ever come to be, that distribution should be really well defined long before it becomes law. I hope you consider these points and be guided accordingly, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions for this panel? And I will say we appreciate the history lesson very much. It often is useful to know where you've been before you decide where you want to go.
Well, I wish I'd have done enough copies to submit it, but I have a few short.
And you know, if you wanted to submit it, we would take it later. We would appreciate
it. I will do that.
Thank you. Carol, is it Dozios? Dozois, perhaps? Dozois. I should have gotten that. And Marcia Edwards? Charlin Homola, it looks like. Your printing is excellent. I just can't pronounce the name.
Hey, it's Dojois. Thank you very much. I'm Carol Dojois. I am a former president of the Oregon Association of Realtors, currently a regional vice president for the National Association of Realtors, and I reside in Eugene, Lane County. You have my written testimony in front of you. I do not want to take a lot of your time because much of my testimony is very much of what has already been said. The last gentleman that spoke reiterated the approximate 6-7% of houses that come on the market in a given year, and I think that's an important factor to consider in your deliberation because it does in fact tax a very small minority of people in a given year, and I think that's an important factor to consider, and I do definitely consider it to be a selective sales tax on real estate. So with that, I want to thank you for letting us be here and giving you the testimony, and I will hope that you will deliberate and vote to not pass this and not send it out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Marcia Edwards, out of Eugene. And the only point I would add is in 2006, National Association of Realtors surveyed 129,000 buyers, seller consumers on what their motivation was for a change in their real estate. And only 50% said that it was due to upscaling their lifestyle. So that concern about the issues in crisis, if it's 6% that are moving annually, half of that is actually at their discretion, and we need to consider the other half in the burn during those times. Thank you.
Are there questions for this? These two? Yeah, and I do too. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is to Carol Dojois.
Yes.
Carol, you're on the national board. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm an officer on the National Association of Realtors this year.
Okay. I have a question. What do other states do? Do other states have transfer taxes, and are there sophisticated ways that people have figured out how to get around these in those states where there are transfer taxes?
Yes, I would say in the majority of states, they have done it by virtue of sales tax. You know, if you were to look at states overall that have a sales tax versus those that do not, the majority of the states that have sales taxes do not have to heavily depend on any transfer taxes. Now, I cannot share with you, because I don't have at my fingertips, statistics from state by state individually. I certainly could get you that information.
That would be extremely helpful. I think Representative Butler indicated to me that he would like to have that, and if you would be able to supply that to the committee, that would
I will pull everything I can and get it to you, yes.
That would be wonderful. Thank you very much. The more we know about these issues, the better. Mm-hmm. Were there other questions? I have a couple, and I would have asked at earlier panels if I'd thought of them at that time, but I didn't, and perhaps you know the answer. Both of you indicated, have given answers that relate to the number of sales and percentage of people that sell and so forth. And I think Ms. Edwards talked about half of sales being for some reason other than upscaling. I'm wondering a couple of things. One, I've lived in the same house in Eugene since 1977. I guess that's 30 years, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't live in the same house that long, I think. Do we have a sense as to how often the typical person who's in the market typically would buy or sell a house?
The last statistic I saw is 2005 for 4.5 years. The intention at the time of the purchase, it was showing in the 2006 statistics, was the intent was 16 years, but then life happens, these crises and situations. So the last statistic, not sure it's the most current from National Association, was 4.5 years.
4.5 years. All right, and of course, if they average in the Barnharts, it may actually be shorter than that for many people.
There would be fewer realtors, and that would be sad.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That's true. The other question that I had was, do we know what the reason why the other half of the people are selling are doing that?
Yes, but I don't have all of those statistics in front of me, but the purpose is that life happens type situation. First-time buyers not buying up but first entering the market is not among those in that 50% I mentioned.
Or divorce or death or those kind of things.
Right. If there are statistics on that, that would also be a useful thing, I think, to add to the material you're providing for Representative Butler's question.
That's available, yes.
Thank you. That would be very helpful, and we appreciate it. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to ask for Sherlyn, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right. It's H-O-M-O-L-A. Third time of asking. All right. Byron, boy. Hannah Knight? Nope, I'm not getting that, am I? Hendricks. Oh, and you must be Sherlyn.
Yes, I wasn't planning on speaking today, but you keep calling me, so I guess I can't sit there
well,
much longer.
Well, your name is on here. That's the reason.
Oh,
that's the reason I called you.
All right. Well, I thought it was just a sign-in sheet to say that we were here. So
you're not required to testify.
Okay. Well, I'm here, so I may as well. I'll just keep it brief. For the record, my name is Sherlyn Homola. I am not currently a realtor. However, I was a realtor previously in the state of California, and I saw a transfer tax that was imposed there. It was a 3.33% withholding tax on income property, and it was not a good thing for the local community people were furious with it. And as far as loopholes, people can get real creative, but the IRS wasn't too happy with them when they got creative, and it was a real bad situation. But I do live in Douglas County, and on behalf of myself, I would like to state that, as others from Douglas County have pointed out, with the loss of our safety net, our county is in dire straits. We are losing quite a few of our services. Our Oregon State University Extension Office is losing $152,000 of revenue, and a lot of other services are losing money. And those services, in order to remain in the county, are looking to a tax district in order to keep the funding going. So the residents of Douglas County are now facing not only this statewide as well as a possible real estate transfer tax, but they're looking at facing tax districts for their libraries, for their extension services, health and human services. They're going to get hit many different ways. And so I implore you to please defeat both these bills and don't put it on the backs of Douglas County residents as well as the residents of other counties in the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. And you, for someone who didn't want to testify, very well. Thank you very much. And I'm purposely trying to, let's go down the list again. Byron, Hendricks?
Yeah.
There's too many squiggles here for it to be that, but if he's here, we'll hear him. Oh, okay. Well, maybe he'll come down the hall because he's hearing us call. And then there's someone whose last name appears to be Tipton from Douglas County. And Clint, last name starts with C-R. It looks like Remark Realty. And while they're coming, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, and Committee. My name is Linda Tipton, and I am a small, independent, newly formed real estate office in beautiful Glide, Oregon, in Douglas County.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I am from California, and I will like to address why I came to Oregon and why I really do not want to see the transfer taxes, because we've had them in California. And basically, they didn't do a doggone bit of good, because we still have high property taxes, we have bonds, we have assessments, we have the 3 1/3 tax, the percentage tax, plus we have the $1.10 per $1,000 transfer tax. And the state is still in trouble. And the general public is tired of, you know, everybody coming back to them saying we need more taxes. When I lived in Oakdale before I moved up here, we had a bond for the fire district. We had a bond for a new hospital. Everything was a bond. And with all the other revenue supposedly being generated from all these taxes, where is the money going? And from another viewpoint, I was chairman of affordable housing in my county, and California now is at 25% housing affordability. Last year, they were down to 13%. And I don't want to see that happen up here in Oregon. We have more of a problem. There's less people that can afford, you know, the down payments. Also, a lot of relocation people are coming from California and out of state. And I know in Douglas County, a lot of our marketing is directed to the California people. And I get a phone call, what are your property taxes like? What other taxes do you have up there? And if they do not like what they hear, they will not come, trust me. And that's going to hurt, you know, a lot of our potential sales. So basically, I agree with everything else that has gone on before me. And thank you. And please think long and hard, and please don't pass this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Thank you.
Oh, and one more thing,
yes,
if I may
please.
Say. As far as I understand, and I was selling for almost 20 years in California, I believe every entity has to pay that transfer tax, whether it be a bankruptcy, relocation, or corporation, whatever. But just a second.
So California has all of those requirements.
I believe so, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's see. Bill Cross, Bill McNamara, Don Schellenberg. I see Don.
Deputy Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg representing Oregon Farm Bureau. No one likes to pay taxes.
But given the fact that when certain services, we want certain services, and there's not a benevolent benefactor somewhere who will constantly foot the bill, we must have taxes. So, for the peace of the public, or to prevent anarchy, when assessing a tax that provides any service, it's important that there's as much of a direct relationship as possible between the tax being paid and the taxpayer, by the taxpayer, and the service being received by the taxpayer. Understand that the blanks on page 14, lines 22 through 25, and I'm addressing House Bill 3052 here, which we are in opposition to, but I understand these blanks, when filled in, may make that connection. But at the moment, I cannot envision a property-related service that would have any direct correlation to a real estate transfer tax. I'm not suggesting this, but I suppose if you were funding an agency that handled all of the real estate transactions and you wanted to cover their operating costs, then a transfer tax would be appropriate. For any other property-related service, there is no other funding that is superior in principle to the property tax. By necessity, a lot of land is bought and sold in the agriculture industry. After reading the bill, what I hear is this giant sucking sound of money leaving the agricultural industry with no benefit in return, a clear violation of the tax principle I described in the beginning. If those blank spaces represent funding a social service, then a tax based on a person's ability to pay, an income tax or consumption tax, is the proper funding mechanism. One might argue that with the real estate tax, you have the ability to pay because you have the money. That is not necessarily true. You may have the availability to pay, but not the ability to pay. All of the money, all of the sale money, may have been dedicated for another specific expense. I guess the bottom line here is, unless we can see a direct and proportionate benefit to the agricultural industry with the revenue collected from a real estate transfer tax, we would oppose House Bill 3052. And then comments on House Bill 3258. And I've just discussed with you House Bill 3052, the principles of taxation, and suggested to you in the discussion of HJR 47 last week that for all property-related services, property taxes are precisely the correct tax that we should turn to, allowing the voters to decide what property-related services they want and what level they want them provided. The loss of Federal Forest Reserve receipts is a very unfortunate turn of events for many counties in Oregon. I don't pretend to know how counties were using those receipts, but I am suggesting to you that to the extent that they were property-related services, and those are decisions that could be made by a vote at the local level, the ability of the voters to create a local property tax base to fund those services should be granted. A real estate tax for providing property-related services is inferior. First, because there is no ongoing correlation between the occasional sale and tax on the annual cost of property-related services. Second, it is inferior because it's not a stable source of income. There's no way of predicting which properties will transfer or what the value they will be, while the services go on day after day and month after month. The property tax, on the other hand, is stable, with only the tax levy varying to meet the revenue needs of the voter-approved budget or budgets. To the extent that counties may have been using federal funds for social services, unless they want to impose their own tax based on residents' ability to pay, those are services that they should appropriately seek help for from the state government, which, by the way, is funded by a tax based on ability to pay, the income tax. I guess the bottom line here is that unless we can see a direct and proportional benefit to the agriculture industry with the revenue collected from a real estate tax, we would oppose House Bill 3258. The Oregon Farm Bureau respectfully requests that you not pass House Bill 3258 and instead amend HJR 47 to give the counties ability to meet their property-related services with voter-approved tax bases. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just close by saying you asked that I check with leadership on that amendment to HJR 47, and I am in the process of doing that. I'm halfway through.
Thank you. We appreciate that, and that's the second time today we've heard about HJR 47. Questions for Don? Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And again, I'll ask Bill Cross or Bill McNamara if they'd like to be heard today. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on either of these two bills? Let's take. I have three hands up here quickly. Woman in the back, man here, yes, you're standing up, and the man in the front, and then there's another one over here in the next panel.
Mr. Chair, we should have had Don Schillenberg tell us how to get around this bill, because coming from the farm organization, they figure out a way to get around everything. So,
all the different kinds of pests there are, huh?
You bet. All the tax break we can come up with.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. My name's Matt Vaughn, and I am a realtor and a member of the Oregon Association of Realtors. And I'm also a constituent of Tobias's. And I have been giving a lot of thought to this when I think of a company that I owned a few years back. It was in the service industry in Portland. And like others have testified, in the service industry, a lot of people do not earn a lot of money. They're people fresh out of college, or they're young people, and they're struggling to make ends meet. They might have student loans that they have to pay and other issues. And I just see this tax as something that's kind of stifling, and, you know, raising the bar a little bit higher and making it harder to reach up there and to attain home ownership. And listening to some of the statistics about the percentage of home ownership in Oregon and in the Portland metropolitan area, it's just kind of sad. And I think that this might be something that may limit that and, in some regards, hurt the people that I suspect we may be trying to help by raising some revenue to fund some programs. So that's just, I guess, my emotional appeal to not put these bills forward. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Chuck Jacobson. I'm a local Salem realtor for about the last 30 years. Let me talk about another side of this that I haven't heard, and that's the development side of things. I'm a commercial broker. There's a popular program going on now called infill development. You take an existing parcel of land within a city that's a large parcel and can be carved up into smaller lots. And generally those are sold at a lesser value than a brand new big subdivision. And those infill lots are a great place for starter homes, for people that are trying to get that first home. Well, if you have a transfer tax when that property is sold to the developer, you're going to pay a transfer tax on it. He's going to go in and try to carve out several lots, maybe rehab an existing house, and then he'll resell all of those properties to people who are either builders for starter homes or for individuals who want to have their own home built. And again, you're going to have a transfer tax on that again. So you're double dipping on that same property within a short period of time. The developers are usually taking quite a bit of risk, and their profit margins are not very high. You're going to add on to the cost of home ownership by doing so. So the simple idea that someone has had the property for a long time and they can take a 1% or whatever percentage piece of it and pay a tax on it doesn't work. There are just too many instances where it doesn't apply, and you have the multitude of taxing that will occur on a single site. Let me shift to another area of the economy, and that's the tenants. Right now, I just put together a transaction where we're selling an old apartment complex. That old apartment complex in Salem is selling for $50,000 a unit. That's a low end in the marketplace for apartments. They go up to $100,000 a unit. The Portland area, they can go even higher. Each one of those property sales is going to have a transfer tax on it. I'll guarantee you there isn't a businessman in the world who doesn't look for a way to pass that on to the tenants. So if you think you're excluding the low-income people who are apartment tenants, you're not. Right now, the availability of apartments in the Salem area is quite low. And that means that even the Section 8 subsidized housing are allowing payments of over $500 per month on a one-bedroom apartment for a senior citizen or someone who has a lower income means. In order for a business owner to be able to pay a property transfer tax, he has got to get that back out from the tenants. So the tenants are going to pay that price one way or another. So those people that are talking about only single-family ownership and so forth, and the triples that, it hits all sections of the society. So those tenants are going to be paying a higher rent. The units are going to be less affordable. And you think, well, the property owner is making great profits. The margin on return on investment for a apartment complex is quite often in the 4% range right now. And a 4% range is a pretty lousy return compared to what you can almost look at and time certificates of deposit. It's that entrepreneurial spirit that keeps people buying and trying to provide ownership and property for tenants and so forth. And you add more taxes to it, and you're decreasing the ability of those individuals to be able to make a living at it. You're increasing the cost of the tenants who are bearing the burden.
Thank you.
My name is Jennifer Zetter, and I'm a real estate agent here in the Oregon area. The other financial impact that no one's talking about is, if I were to look at the number of sales I did last year, how many I would lose potentially from this tax is about 5 transactions. 5 transactions doesn't sound like a lot. I pay a coordinator $200 per transaction to handle the paperwork. That's $1,000 a year she's going to lose right off the bat. There's 5 home inspections that weren't done. Most of the time when we take a listing, we tell a seller to expect about a 1% in repairs to be done by a licensed contracted contractor. That's 5 repairs done at 1% that are not done within the economy. The ripple effect that this is going to have throughout the state of Oregon is not going to stay with just the sellers. Mortgage brokers, there's 5 transactions at $250,000 to $350,000 that were not put through a mortgage company. The gas loan, 5 transactions could be the difference between me having a job next year and not. So this is not just going to affect sellers. It is going to affect so many different vendors throughout the state of Oregon, our business cards, our flyers. As realtors, we go through tremendous amounts of money putting back into the community by being able to be in business. The second thing I think this does is it takes buyers, sellers, and puts them in a situation where they're going to be more likely to go into representation or go into sales without representation. And that's neither here nor there in some degrees, but at the same time, I think it puts sellers at greater risk without having representation of knowing what their rights are, and it's going to change the way that we do real estate here in Oregon.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? I had just one, and that's for Chuck. You indicate that you think there's about a 4% return on investment for apartment owners now, I think is the number you gave. Does that include appreciation, or is that based on operations?
That's based on operations and appreciation. It all depends on the area and the market and so forth. Appreciations have been in the 5% to 6% range in the Mid-Valley here. Some areas are getting greater appreciation because they're at their boundaries of their urban growth boundary, and they're maximizing their space within the cities.
Thank you. Appreciate that answer. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, not directed to this group, but directed to everyone here. I note that under Section 9 of the bill that foreign governments and foreign countries are excluded from payment of the tax. Does anyone here deal with any foreign government, offshore real estate holders? Mr. Chair. Yeah, the reason that I ask that is because that I think that is how, and I'd asked a question earlier about how to get out of this tax, I think there are offshore countries that actually own real estate in the United States for the benefit of individuals, and they will continue to hold it in that foreign national, actually the name of the country, and hold it off the market. I have a whole series of questions, not the least of which, what happens when I just go ahead and incorporate and stick my land into the LLC, which is a tax-free transfer, which is covered by the bill, and then I just sell my corporation. And then Mary Doe, who buys my corporation, sells it to Bill Smith, who sells it to, and that is not covered as I see it under the bill. That's why I wanted Don Schoenberg to come back. Get a farmer on board. He'll tell us how to avoid the tax.
Thank you. And for those of you who don't know, Representative Butler is a is a certified public accountant, and so it's part of his job is to know these things. Thank you for that comment, Representative. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. There was another hand back here, and a couple more. I see three. Why don't you three come up, and we'll take you in a minute. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Richard Seward, Representative Barnhart. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this committee. I am one of those fast-fading individuals as a small business owner in the area. I own four real estate-related companies, three in Marion County, one in Clatsop County. And before I go, I got to take the sticker off here. My back is turned to my associates, and I hope I get out of here alive. But I have to say I'm conflicted here, and I want to talk to the principals of these bills. The reason I'm conflicted is one of my businesses is a property management company. And I'm looking at the passage of a real estate transfer tax slowing down the viability of people coming into the marketplace, which is going to increase the renters, the number of renters, and I'm going to profit by that. It's going to make my business a whole lot more profitable. The owners are going to be, a lot of owners are not going to be able to sell because buyers are not going to be able to afford it. Just because of you've heard testimony today about the ability to qualify for some of these entry-level homes. And that's really true. So on one hand, I'm really happy that something like this is coming along because it's going to add to my variety of homes that I'm going to be able to bring on the market on a rental basis and increase my profit. My other confliction, though, is one of my other businesses caters strictly to retired people, seniors. It's in Woodburn, at Woodburn Senior States. And I've had several people who got wind of this and have come into my office and have sat down and had a cup of coffee and talked to me a little bit about it, and they're very concerned. I'll address a widow who was in my office not too long ago, and she said, you know, two years ago I could have bought a house in this subdivision for about $75,000. I had to buy it last year for $135,000. It took a lot more of my savings to be able to afford to do this. She said, now do I have to pay a tax to sell it? The house is worth $150,000. She's looking at health issues and having to move on to assisted living. And she's saying, well, that's $1,500 if this 1% sales tax goes through that I'm going to have to pay. That's a month's worth of my living expenses somewhere. And she said, that's tough. It's already eaten into the cash that she had to buy it because of the appreciated value in the properties. Now she is looking at having to give up more of those earnings to do that. And so she said, why don't I just pass it on to the buyers? Because we discussed that. And I said, well, unfortunately, in today's market, our real estate inventory has taken a hit. In the industry itself has taken a hit. Oregon appreciated rapidly. It's now settling down. Our inventory this time last year was somewhere in the area of a couple months' worth of inventory. Now we're approaching 6 months' worth of inventory. The prices are sliding. The number of buyers are going down. The whole process is going down. And I've told her, I said, unfortunately, you're not going to get your $150,000 that you thought you were going to get. More likely, you're going to have to be competitive, and you're going to be back closer to that price that you paid for it 2 years ago. So her concern is the $1,500. Now, that's a small number on the 1% in the big picture of things, but let's magnify that a lot. As we're aging, our population is aging. I'm one of them. and I'm looking at things like this, and affordable housing is getting tougher and tougher for those people who are on fixed incomes and are facing retirement and wanting to do that. So I think I'll put this back on again, only because the senior side of it outweighs my profit motive in this whole picture. And I really would like to, just from a whole emotional perspective, would like to ask this committee to take a hard look at it from the standpoint of someone who's on fixed incomes. And what's that going to be? What's that going to mean 10 years from now when the baby boomers are really deep into this, having to do this? And so with that in mind, I would respectfully submit that this not go any further than these rooms. I just don't see the need for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Either of you?
I'd like to, first of all, my name is Ray Penny. I'm from Coos County. I'm on the board of directors of the realtors down there, and I'm also a owner of a real estate company there. I'd like to commend the creativity of the authors of these two bills in conjuring up such a couple of bills that represent only 6% of the population. And I guess I would urge, if you can't live within our means, if we have to have more money, then we need to come up with some kind of a tax, whatever you want to call it. It is a tax. Do something that is broad-based and affects everybody, not just people who are selling their homes. There were some statistics brought up earlier, talking about a 3% of the population that is moving into real estate and maybe upward bound and transferring their homes. Mr. Barnhart, you said you lived in your home for 30 years. A figure of 4.5 years was posed as a more realistic, and I think you'll find if you examine that 4.5 year population, those are people who are lower income. They're first-time buyers who are upgrading and who probably can least afford it, whereas those of us who have been in our homes for extended periods of time could afford a tax if we did have such a tax. Again, I think we need to impose, if we need more money, can't live within our means, then we need to structure a broader base tax that goes across the board and affects 100% of the population, not just 6%.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Andrew Berlenberg. I'm a realtor in the Portland metropolitan area. I work across Multnomah, Washington, a little bit in Clackamas County. I want to touch on two different aspects. A lot has been talked about the affordability for first-time buyers. Mm-hmm. What we haven't touched upon is there's a choice for a lot of these people. I'm also licensed in Washington, and I've seen a lot of people that decide to go across the river because a lot of reasons, housing, one of them being less expensive than in Portland. So we lose them and their contribution to the economy because of that. I've seen others that just don't come at all. They stay in Idaho or they stay in Kansas and they turn down the job when they find out what our housing is like. Adding another 1% is just going to make that less affordable. The second thing that I want to touch on is the impact to sellers. I know it seems like a windfall, the way our prices have increased over the last 5 years, that when someone sells a house that they've lived in for a long time, there should be plenty of money there. And we touched on that a little bit, but I wanted to go through three anecdotes of what I've experienced in the last year. These are all people in their 50s who life has taken a different turn, and we've struggled or are struggling to get them the money out of their house that they need. And these can be houses up to $750,000. In one instance, the husband lost a job with Intel. They lost $1 million in the stock market, some of it Intel-related during the crash. Different circumstances, the house is too big, they're multifamily living together, and the kids need to go on their own. And you know, that's one issue. They've owned the house. They should see technically nice appreciation on paper, but they barely have the money to get out of their house after they have to pay all their bills. Another similar client of mine, big medical bills, related tax issues because of that. They couldn't pay their self-employment taxes because of the medical bills. And we struggled to get them out at several $100,000 gain on their house. And then my last client anecdote that I want to relate, lived in their house for 30 years. He came down with prostate cancer, lost a job during the telecom or the technology meltdown, couldn't find comparable work. They were in and out of foreclosure multiple times, and we finally got them out of their house as well. And she's now struggling to buy a new place. They're renting. So those are three examples of people that have owned their house for quite some time. They're in their 50s. They're not just starting out where they have years to kind of recover from this kind of a financial catastrophe, and a little bit extra would hurt them very much. So like everyone that's come before me, I would encourage you to look for other sources if we do in fact need more revenue. And thank you again for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
Just by way of comment, I think Andrew Grillenberg's comment is really, really very salient. I live on the border with Idaho, and I've mentioned this before in this committee. Recently, in Idaho, across the river in Fruitland, Idaho, a new subdivision was announced, 500 new homes in Fruitland, Idaho. That's more homes than I have had built in my county, in my entire county. of nearly 10,000 square miles in the past 35 years in one subdivision in Idaho, and they would not be paying this tax. Thank you, Mr. Rillinger.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Thank you, gentlemen. And then there was another hand over here, and yes, ma'am, please come forward. And is there anyone else who would like to be heard today? Yes, ma'am, you please come forward as well. Anyone else? We have an empty chair. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for letting me testify at this hearing. I'm Angela Harrelson. I'm from Curry County, Oregon. We are the most southwestern county in the state. We are also one of the 12 most impoverished counties in the state, and we rely very heavily on the ONC funds. I would ask you to vehemently and categorically oppose this. This will devastate our county. It will devastate our population. The average small family at this time in our county cannot afford a home. The average appreciation in our county has been 3%. You were talking about taking away one-third of the appreciation on a home for a small family. The majority of the families in our county are in the agricultural, fishing, or government industries. The reasons they are moving to or from this county is work. It's not because they are having this boom in real estate and they're making a huge profit, so they're flipping houses. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing small families. We're seeing retirees come in. They have a very set budget. In 5 to 10 years, these retirees have to move from our area due to health reasons. We don't have the health care facilities that they need. Therefore, you have already just eliminated a huge portion of our population because now they cannot afford this house. They have an additional tax. One of the issues that has not been brought up is the double taxation. We're already paying property taxes. Now we're going to pay a sales tax again on the real estate that we're paying a property tax on. It doesn't make sense. And I ask you to please, please, just drop the bill here, let it go by the wayside.
Thank you.
My name is Mary McDonald. I reside in Tillamook County and work in Lincoln County. And I can't speak for the other realtors in this room, but something that I've noticed in recent years is that a lot of buyers that are coming into the potential real estate market are people who have impeccable credit, certainly qualified to own a home, but don't have a lot of liquid cash, be it first-time home buyers or people who are retiring, downsizing, that kind of thing. And so a common practice is to ask the seller to help them out in paying a portion of their closing costs and helping them financially to get into the home that the seller is selling. I see this potential bill, both of these potential bills, eliminating that and therefore eliminating a lot of people from becoming a homeowner. And I think that that's a bad thing. It's going to, a lot of times sellers are more than willing to do that, and it will eliminate that. And if the sellers are paying a tax, they won't be as willing to help the buyers get into the real estate market and into a home as they have been in the past. And I think that that would be a really bad thing. You know, I see people, I just had a situation where a lady has impeccable credit. She's 72 years old, has impeccable credit, but doesn't have a lot of liquid cash. Her husband, she's a recent widow, and she would like to buy just a small home and be settled. She has impeccable credit, but no liquid cash, and she can't buy a house. And I think that this would just compound it even more.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. And our last chair was left vacant. I assume everyone who wanted to has been heard. And with that, we will close the public hearing, and the committee is adjourned.